Our next guest, a longtime chief editorial cartoonist for the Boston Globe, a two-time Pulitzer Prize winner. He's the author of more than a dozen books. We're thrilled to have Paul Zepp join us here on Downtown. Paul, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon. Glad to have you.
Thank you so much for being with us. We mentioned the number of books. Your latest is entitled Iconic Faces, and that is, well, it's an appropriate name. You've covered some of the most recognizable and influential people of the last 50 to 100 years or so there.
Well, the premise was initially that it would be an interesting face that I'd enjoy drawing, and then it sort of took on a life of its own, I guess.
Who's been supposed
to be iconic portraits.
Who's been a favorite of yours to draw through the years?
Well, as a political cartoonist, my favorite, of course, was Richard Nixon up until now. The guy we got in there now is, I've never seen anything quite like it.
Oh, I don't think any of us have there. When you're creating your work, especially the first time, do you look for, and does it help if someone has a distinguishing feature that you can build on?
Oh, yeah. That was the great thing about Nixon. You could draw him from behind and you'd know it was him. They all have to, for me, to capture the essence of the guy, I have to really get the expression in their mouth. If I do that, I can almost run away with the rest of the features.
Is it safe to say, too, that you let the character of the person come through in the drawings that you do, that we see? I don't want to make judgments here. No, I guess I do. your drawings of Trump let us see what's inside of him. I guess that's how I'll put it.
Well, I hope that's the case, because that's my intention. And I don't find there's much inside of this guy, but other than a lot of bad stuff. But I probably shouldn't say that. I have no idea what your audience is up there.
Well, if they're hanging around with us, they're probably on that side too. So they're right with you here. Have you ever? Now, you were with the Globe from 1967 to 2001. Were you ever censored?
Oh, yeah, I lost a few cartoons. I mean, I was sued 5 times. I was blackballed at 5 golf courses. And I almost had a fist fight in a bookstore. So I've had, I had my moments. But, to the Globe's credit, I had one of the best editors. And frankly, the Taylor family were wonderful publishers. And, really, for the most part, I didn't lose too many cartoons. But my area of where I did lose stuff was with the Catholic Church, and it was hard to see the movie spotlight because, I tried to do a lot of that stuff before, and the Globe, not being a Catholic organization at the top, really didn't want to get into knock heads with the Catholic Church in Boston. So,
are you able to share with us any of the lawsuits who might have sued you along the way?
Well, one of them was Governor Ed King. there were a couple of doctors. There was a Peter Fuller, who at one time was a big Cadillac dealer. I know there was a couple more.
Having spent a lot of time in bookstores myself, I love wandering around them. I have to ask, what led to the fist fight in the bookstore?
Well, I was at the Globe for 37 years, and you do, there are people who dislike what you do, and I had a book signing, and I guess this particular fellow made notice and decided to make a night of it. But I did play professional hockey one time, so, it was not an issue for me.
Just pulled his shirt over his head and let him have it?
Yeah. No. There's a technique to that stuff. So.
Absolutely. We're talking with Paul Zepp here on Downtown. When people have expressed their displeasure with your work, Paul, has it had more to do with the content or the actual drawing and the representation of them?
Well, I don't know. I mean, having done it for such a long time in Boston with the Globe, I I suppose it covered a whole multiple of sins. You know, sometimes it was a particular issue that people disagreed on. You know, when the Globe was one of the first papers to come out against the war in Vietnam, and I used to get toilet paper in the mail. And then, you know, they had other issues that, to their credit, they were on the right side of. And, you know, again, it's a case of trying to convert people to a particular point of view or point out the particular aspects of it.
What is it that you can do in a political cartoon that can often be more effective than writing an op-ed piece might be?
Well, you know, they say a picture's worth a thousand words. It is a visual thing. And actually, you know, today the political cartoon is really on its way out because of that. You know, the decline of newspapers, they're trying to save readers. They don't want to offend readers. They don't want to, and that was my problem when I had to leave the Globe, because I went from being a well-paid asset to an overpaid liability in their mind, because I would offend readers. And the New York Times owned the Globe at that time, and, you know, they saw me as a liability.
And
at a time when they're trying to save readers. And that's happened more frequently in the last few years as more and more papers have dried up.
Oh, absolutely. So why, from your perspective, why are political cartoons so important, and why should we fight to save them when we can?
Well, you know, as you said, it does, if it's done properly, it makes it should make an impact. It should. It's there visually. It's there right on the mark. As opposed to reading a long column. But that can work the other way if you're worried about offending people.
Is it harder?
You know, again, to the Globe's credit, when they hired me, Tom Winship, who was the editor of the paper, came from the Washington Post and was familiar with Herb Block, who was the great
right.
Washington Post cartoonist for years. So he had an understanding how the job should be played. And right from the beginning, they really did give me a lot of latitude.
Is it hard to create your work when life itself is as absurd as it's been for the last couple of years?
Well, I mean, my job is the easiest in the world right now. And my poor wife doesn't have an outlet.
I wanted to ask you, Paul, when you're drawing the current occupant of the White House, what do you begin with?
Well, whatever outrageous thing he said today.
But physically, where do you start?
It's a daily occurrence, and it's. I mean, for a satirist, it's a gold mine, I guess.
With his appearance, do you begin with hair? Do you begin with one of his chins? How does it start?
Well, you've discovered two of the main focal points. I don't know. I find him very easy to draw. I can draw him from, you know, not unlike Nixon, I can draw him from almost any perspective or corner or view or whatever. He's just got one of those very easy faces. And, you know, obviously the orange orangutan hair doesn't hurt either. So.
You've been drawing presidents going back to Richard, actually back to Lyndon Johnson. Who was toughest to draw?
Well, the H.W. Bush was not particularly easy. You know, the better looking a guy is, the harder it is to
right,
draw.
Right, sure.
I mean, I mean, looking at some of these current Democratic candidates, and boy, some of them are going to be very difficult to caricature.
Do you have one that you favor from an artist's perspective?
Well, I've done Joe Biden for a number of years, so I've got him down. I mean, they're all doable. It's just a matter of how flexible it is. You know, whether you can, as they say, whether you can do them from behind or three quarters. And I mean, I like to think I can do whoever it is. It's just a matter of how much you can exaggerate them.
Well, Paul, I was asking you this before we got cut off earlier. How do we get to this point? I mean, you're a student of American history. It seems like this has happened in a blur over the last couple of years. How do we get to this point in our democracy where truth is in question?
Well, you know, you think about it, when I was mentioning the decline in newspapers, people rely on cable television, which is really just talking heads. I think with Trump, frankly, you've never had a guy lie like this before. And as the guy from the fellow who was heading up CBS at the time said, they made so much money, and he conceded that they didn't do a very good job. I mean, this just came out of the blue. We were not prepared for this, for a guy who just, and he's, you know, he's was a reality TV guy, so he really had, he knows how to do that stuff. I know there's a lot of factors there, but you're right. We've never seen this before. I've been doing this for over 50 years, and I've never seen anything like it. And plus, you've had a whole party that's just basically taken a walk.
Well, that's the other thing.
They're terrified of this guy.
We were talking about our senator, Susan Collins, who has flip-flopped more times than we can count here. And is it simply, God, I hate to think this, is it simply that these jobs in the Senate, in the House, have become so valuable to them that they'll change their principles in fear of losing those jobs?
You know what? You just hit it. You've hit right on it. That's exactly right. I mean, you think about it, what it costs to win a Senate seat today. Those are great jobs. There's not a whole lot of heavy lifting there, and you've really hit on it. That's exactly right, and that's what's happened with the Republicans up for re-election in the Senate right now. They're too afraid of what he could do for them run somebody in the primary. They're terrified of this guy and his tweets.
And it shocks me, but I guess it shouldn't at this point, that the idea of securing our elections could be perceived by anybody as a partisan issue.
Well, you know, what McConnell did yesterday or today or whenever he did it, I mean, that's just so egregious, and it's, I mean, if the American public accepts this, you know, that's going to be we're going to lose a democracy. I mean, my father came over from Hungary when he was 9 years old. I've been to Hungary. I look at Hungary today, and it's run by a guy, Viktor Orban, runs Hungary. And that used to be a democracy. And now he controls the courts, he controls the legislature, he controls the media. It's no longer a democratic country.
Well, it's scary. I mean, I teach history, and I think this is, in one hand, it's a great lesson, but a frightening one. Things seem so secure. We took democracy for granted for such a long time, but it can go away in the blink of an eye if you don't tend to it. And I feel like that's part of what happened, too, is that we got lazy as a nation.
Well, that's right. We become inured to a system. But, you know, the scary thing is the press. For him to that's the first thing that happens in a dictatorship, as you know. And I worry about it. My son works for Reuters, and he's out, you know, he's doing a lot of heavy lifting, and it's scary stuff. And what this guy has done with the press alone is just outrageous. It's the first step.
It sure is. It's frightening.
You know, and unless the Democrats win the Senate and the House and maintain the House, you know, a lot of this stuff that they're talking about in the campaign, it's going to go nowhere as long as this guy has the Senate and gets reelected.
We're talking with Paul Zepp here on Downtown. On a much lighter note, how's your golf game?
Well, I shoot my age. That's the best thing I can say. but I'm an older guy now.
And you mentioned you were, because you're from Canada originally, so it's required to play hockey, but you did play some pro hockey, right?
Yeah, my dream was to play in the National Hockey League. And, you know, I think early on I realized it was back in the 16 league, and I knew I was going to make the Red Wings. And I started doing sports cartoons for the Hamilton Spectator in Hamilton, where I grew up, when I was 16. And that, at some point, one of the sports writers said, you know, you should be looking at editorial cartoons because the sports cartoon is on the decline because of television. And that's how I got into that. I thought it was a better cartoonist than a hockey player. So,
well, I'm glad you mentioned that, too, because that has almost completely vanished from the landscape. But there was a time in the early part of the 20th century when sports cartoonists were everywhere.
Oh, yeah. I grew up with Willard Mullen, who was a great American sports cartoonist in New York. And, that's the direction of the editorial cartoon today, too, now.
And was it the ability in many ways to transmit photographs by wire? Did that kind of spell the death knell of sports cartoonists?
Well, you know, other than Willard Mullen, who actually did make statements, most of the sports cartoons were basically depicting what's happening. Mm. And, you know, television changed all that because it was right there. But yeah, that was a major change in my life when
we started looking
at editorial cartoons.
We share a mutual friend too, and it was actually our friend Upton Bell who suggested having you on the show. But there aren't many more interesting people in this world than I know of than Upton Bell.
You know what? You are so right. Uppy is. We just saw Uppy. We were up in Massachusetts, and we had Uppy for dinner, and he is one of the most interesting guys on the planet. And we go back to when we each did a thing at Channel 7 in Boston, and he was on with Will McDonough, and, you know, had just left the Patriots as the general manager. And so I've known Uppy for so long, and he's one of my dearest pals.
Well, he's great. Well, Paul, it's been a delight for us to talk with you. I've enjoyed your work for many, many years, and we so appreciate you making time for us this afternoon.
Well, it's my pleasure. I really appreciate it, Rich. And thank you so much.
Also, a happy anniversary in advance to you.
Well, thank you, too. That's one of the great things in my life right now. So, thank you.
Oh, we appreciate it. Thank you, Paul. Hope to talk again sometime.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
That's Paul Zipp with us here on Downtown, the Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist. And still doing great work.
Yes, and I did not recognize his name when we got him on the show. But then as soon as I looked him up, I was like, oh, yeah, I've seen those cartoons.
Oh,
those are...
And his unmistakable signature as well.
Yeah. His depiction of Trump is just amazing. But, yeah, as you guys were talking about, going back so far and so many presidents that he's caricatured over the years, just amazing.
Absolutely. That was fun. Paul Zipp with us on Downtown.